for our last session this morning, or before lunch at least, we're going to begin our Madhurya Kadambini course. This is a very interesting course. It's about a, 29-page book, it appears. Short book written by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And right now we're going to give out the first 10 pages, I believe. And we'll try and go through those today. Yes. Oh. So what happened? Yeah. There are two page fours. There's page three and four. That's one sheet of paper. Three on one side, four on the other. Then the next sheet is pages four and five. So you get double the mercy. Must be a very important page. Yeah, well, I'm going to stand up mainly. Is that okay? I'm going to stand up mainly. Is it? But I'm going to be standing up again. Is it better? Yeah. So, yeah, as long as you can hear me. Does it? Oh. Oh, right. Okay. Okay, how are we doing?
We need up to page 10, up to and including. Everyone has five now? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, everyone got page 5. Anyone need anything else? Any other pages? Everyone else got everything? What do you need? 6 and 7? 6 and 7 is needed now. 2. Okay, so look, if you've got all your first 10 pages, then the next thing you need, what, 6 and 7, is it? 6 and 7. Okay. Now, next thing is, just write down this list which we have written on the board here. Hope you can read my writing. Shraddha, So this is a list, 1 to 9, of the 9 stages in devotional service, beginning from number 1, Shraddha, faith, and then going stage by stage, culminating at number 9, Prema, pure love of God. So if you're having any difficulty reading any of them, this is Shraddha, faith. Number 2 is Sadhu Sangha, association with devotees. Number 3, Bhajana Kriya, means a person actually takes up devotional service in a practical way. Number 4, Anartha Nivritti. Anartha Nivritti, removing the unwanted things from the heart. Number 5, Nishta. When all the unwanted things are removed, then one becomes steady in devotional service, fixed in devotional service. Then number 6, when one is fixed in devotional service, naturally one experiences a spiritual taste, being so absorbed on the transcendental platform, then naturally one experiences transcendental pleasure. So that's 6, ruchi, taste. Number 7, asakti, being so fixed in devotional service and getting so much taste of spiritual pleasure, one becomes very attached to being in devotional service. Number 8, when one is very deeply attached, and that attachment for Krishna and devotional service is becoming stronger and stronger and stronger and more all-consuming, then one begins to experience love of God. So that is bhava. Bhava basically means the beginning of love of God as such. And when one is absorbed in devotional service in that mood, as one carries on more and more, then that beginnings of love of God gradually matures and becomes actual prema, Krishna prema, love of God. And Lord Chaitanya said, prema pumarto mahan. Pumarto mahan. That prema, love of Krishna, is the greatest goal in life. There's so many things which people may consider goals. They want to achieve certain things in their lives. But the mahan, prema, pumarto mahan, the greatest goal is love of God. So in other words, this is outlining the progress of a devotee in devotional service from the very, very beginning, Shraddha, faith, before the devotee has really taken up devotional service, actually. So from that very first point, right to the complete point. Of course, there's no final conclusion in a sense. There are even stages of love of God. There are stages beyond prema. But these are the main stages which we'll be concerned with, up to the level of prema, which is perfection. So the other stages just mean like perfect, more perfect, most perfect, just degrees of perfection. So this is the subject matter of this book, Madhurika Dhamini. Actually, this Madhurika Dhamini, it's by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And what it's his commentary on two verses, written by Srila Rupa Goswami. They appear in the first part of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, as Prabhupada presented it, towards the end there. So Srila Rupa Goswami has composed two verses in which he is outlining these stages, Ado Shada, Tata Sadhu, Sangata Bhajana Kriya, Tato Narta Nivriti Syat, Tato Nishta Ruchis Tata, Atasaktis Tata Bhava, Tato Prema Vidachati, Sadhikan Mayam Pena, Haru Bhava Vedkrama.
from the beginning of Ado Shraddha. Ado means first. First of all, faith. Then Sadhu Sangha, association. And in this way, our devotional service can develop step by step. So it means it's a science. Devotional service is a very progressive and like coherent type of science, step by step. And there are symptoms on every level, at every step. And if we understand what are the symptoms of the different stages, then we can understand what level we're on. And that, of course, is very important. If you don't understand what level you're on yourself, then you may assume that you're on another level and that you should do certain things, but they may not be relevant to you. Generally speaking, people would be more prone to think, if they didn't really know, they would perhaps be more prone to think that they're more advanced rather than that they're less advanced than they're actually. So therefore you get people like, with all due respect, the born-again Christians and others, who think they're extremely advanced. If you ask them, do you love God? They'll say, oh yes. Oh, I love Him so much. In other words, I'm perfect. But actually, they may not have really developed so much Shraddha. In other words, you tell them about Krishna, and they may say, what? Krishna? This is no good. We're not interested in Krishna. Whereas a devotee of Krishna, who is actually not necessarily on the level of Prema or even very advanced, but at least they're engaging in the process and they're trying, then they will have faith. Meaning they'll also be able to recognize that, oh yes, there is something in Christianity. Whatever it may be, it may not be that much, but there's something there. So we don't just write it off and throw it out the window. And even in Islam or whatever, Judaism, there's so many different processes we see around us. So a devotee can recognize that, oh yes, there is something there. It may not be as much as there is in Krishna consciousness, but there's something there. So this means faith is actually there. One devotee said a very nice thing about Srila Prabhupada, that after Prabhupada disappeared, that I'm sure that if I meet Prabhupada again, and obviously it won't be in that as Srila Prabhupada as is in the picture there, as we knew Prabhupada here. But he said that I'm sure if I meet Prabhupada again, I'll recognize him. I'll know him. Even though he may appear in a totally different form altogether. So this is faith. Faith. From faith comes a type of perception. And therefore one is able to recognize whatever it is on the basis of that perception, which is developing from faith. So because the devotees do actually have faith, therefore they can see Krishna consciousness even in small forms in other practices and in other types of disciplines. So this book then, Madhurya Kadambini, is a commentary just on two verses. So just imagine if you wrote a commentary on the entire Bhakti Rasayana. It would be vast. But anyway, this is very important because we may recognize where we are at and what we need to do, which is extremely vital. It's essential if you're to actually make progress. Otherwise, you'll try to act in a way which you're not fit for, and this will just mess up your spiritual life. Or you'll take a wrong direction at some point, thinking that my next step is this, but it may not be. So it's very important. And also it will help you to recognize the positions of other devotees, which is also important, at least to some extent. We don't want to get too much into like analyzing other devotees, but at least it's important to recognize who's senior or who's more advanced than you. Because if you can recognize such persons, then you'll be able to take their association nicely in the right way. It's important to recognize who's more or less on the same level as you, because then you can cultivate a certain type of relationship with that type of devotee, a friendly relationship. And also it's important to recognize who's junior to you, because then you'll know that I don't really need to listen so much. They may not be able to help me so much, but I can try and help them. These three categories of devotees we should be able to recognize in relation to ourselves. Who's more advanced, who's more or less on the same level, and who's more or less junior to us. And then relate with them in different ways, and this will help us. So in this regard, this book is very important. So, the very beginning, if you turn to page 1, there's a Mangalacharana. Mangalacharana basically means invocation or introduction, just as we noted with Tattvasandhava. So here you get a similar thing, somewhat similar. He begins, you'll see the first verse, actually it's a very beautiful verse. You'll have to forgive us for the printing here. Anyway, you can't really see what lines are what in the verse to actually chant the Sanskrit. But the translation is very beautiful. The mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an uncontrollable cloud bank of exquisitely sweet nectar. So that in itself is very beautiful. An uncontrollable cloud bank. Actually means like a monsoon cloud rolling in, bringing a great storm, bringing a great inundation. So, this great cloud bank, uncontrollable cloud bank, of exquisitely sweet nectar, we chant Hare Krishna and we enjoy it, at least enough so that we carry on. Sometimes we may struggle a little bit, but some experience of pleasure is there, therefore we carry on. But here, Vishwas Chakravarti Thakur, the author, is saying that devotional service is exquisitely sweet. So we can look forward to that. As one advances, then one gets a nicer and nicer taste in devotional service, until it becomes just quite inconceivable by material standards. So this is what he's saying, that the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is like this, and the sudden appearance of this cloud bank fully rejuvenates the grains of ninefold bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, these are the nine processes of devotional service in the field of the heart, and it extinguishes the burning summer heat of lust and bestows rapture to the universal river of living beings. Even from far off, what to speak of when you're getting the inundation, even from far off, may those clouds of the Lord's mercy give satisfaction and pleasure even to this worthless soul, a dried up tree in the desert. So you can see that there's certain themes here which are very similar to the themes in those introductory 8 verses in Tattvasandhava. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, of course, he's a follower of the 6 Sutras. So then, what does he do next verse? He offers his obeisances to Rupa Goswami. Again, this is the same as what Jiva Goswami did. So now, what does he do now? He says, we will proceed on the basis of Shastra, Shabda Praman. This is, again, exactly following in the footsteps. Of course, in Tattvasandhava, Jiva Goswami is first of all establishing that this is what we should do. And then, once he's done that, then he continues on that basis. But of course, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has already accepted that Shastra, or Shabda, is the praman, is the means by which we'll get knowledge. So we're going to proceed on that basis. And what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about Krishna. Krishna is very nice. He's superior to Brahman. This is now about halfway down the first page. He's superior to Brahman. He is Brahma Pucham Pratishta. That means Brahman is established on him. He is Paramanandamaya Purusha, the supreme blissful person. Parat Paratattva. That means the supreme, supreme truth. Even more supreme than supreme. And he's also the embodiment of rasa, of nectar, or the transcendental ecstasy and transcendental mellows of devotional service. Rasa Vaisa. He is directly rasa. He is rasa in person. Akila Rasamrita Sindhu, or Murti. Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the very Murti of all rasa amrita, of all the nectar of all the rasas. So he is the complete supreme personality of Godhead. And then this last verse, you see this verse down towards the bottom, Malanam Asaniya Nina, and so on. This is a verse from 10th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the fact that Krishna is the embodiment of all rasas, that means Shantadasya Vatsalya, Shantadasya Sakya Vatsalya, and Madhurya Ras, the five main rasas, neutrality, servitude, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal love, and then the seven indirect rasas, like chivalry, compassion, dread. Anyway, there's seven indirect rasas. So they all manifested in persons when Krishna walked into the wrestling arena of Kamsa, just before he killed Kamsa. And most of them are listed out here. The wrestlers saw him in a certain way. Ordinary people saw him in a certain way. Like that. So people saw him in these 12 different ways, and those 12 different ways are according to the five primary rasas, direct rasas, and the seven indirect rasas. So we're not going to go into the details of all that, but that's at least the idea. So now, what we've seen, we're discussing the process of devotional service, starting with Shraddha, and culminating, so to speak, in prema, at least reaching perfection in prema. Where should we begin? We should begin with someone who is not a devotee, but then they become a devotee. In other words, someone who's not even in category number one. And in fact, this is what is discussed basically on page 2. Actually, from the bottom of page 1, and you can get out page 2. You're not feeling sleepy, are you, anything? No? Yes? Anyway, what can we do? This is why we're walking up and down. Including me. So, okay. So let us just begin, though. Before we start about the person who's not a devotee and who then becomes a devotee and comes to level 1, Shraddha, let us just talk about Krishna. And when we understand a little bit about Krishna, then we'll understand a little bit of what has to happen to a person if they're to come to Krishna. Because there's a saying that to enter fire, you have to become fire. We are not fire. So if we enter fire, we will be affected by that. We won't be able to easily enter fire, very happily. So someone who is not a devotee means they are. So if we enter fire, we will be affected by that. We won't be able to easily enter fire, very happily. So someone who is not a devotee means they are on the material platform. And Krishna is completely transcendental. So in order for them, someone who's completely mundane, to come to the beginnings even of the transcendental platform, so something quite radical has to happen. So Krishna is transcendental. Whatever he does is transcendental. Even if he does something which appears to be material, it's not material. There's nothing material to do with Krishna. Now, there's also nothing material to do with Krishna's internal, or his personal energies. His personal energies, direct personal energies. This material energy, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, explains that it's not one of his direct personal energies. By that I mean a manifestation of his own character directly. Krishna says, Bhumirapo Malo Bayukamano Virecha, Ahankara Itiyame, Vinaprakritya Ashtada, Earth, Water, Fire, Ether, Mind, Intelligence, False Ego. Krishna says, these are my Vinaprakritya, separated energies. Means he is not personally really connected with them. Separated energy. And we are under the influence of those energies, or that energy, the material energy. Therefore, where is Krishna? We are not seeing Krishna. Because it's separate in that sense. The personal energy means spiritual potency. And there are subdivisions of the spiritual potency. Like Samvit, Sandini, Kladini. These are the three main divisions of the spiritual potency. The pleasure potency, the potency of knowledge and existence, eternity. So now bhakti, devotional service. If a person is to get bhakti, now how are they going to get it? Because bhakti is one of those internal, personal potencies which are direct manifestations of the Lord's personal spiritual nature. And through it, we connect directly with the supreme spiritual personality of Godhead. But we are on the mundane platform, or at least the people in general are completely on the mundane platform. So on page 2, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, he raises the question that if Krishna is completely transcendental, and if the process of bhakti is also completely transcendental, but we are not at all transcendental, we're actually separated by the material energy, then how will we come to the level even of, number one, Shraddha, which is, even though it's the beginning, but it is at least the beginning of the transcendental platform. Does this sound too complicated to all of you, or any of you? Are you following the basic idea here? Yeah, okay. So, like, for example, towards the top of page 2, he quotes one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually Canto 1, Chapter 2, Verse 6. Svaipam samparo dharano yato bhaktir bhavsajaya vaitaki apratinata yayatma supersedati. So the basic idea there is that such devotional service, which is the greatest thing, greatest occupation. So devotional service, if it's actually to really be devotional service, it has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. And the word for unmotivated is ahoitaki, which means unmotivated or causeless. Causeless. Cause means that if I want you to do something, I say, look, here's 10 rands, so you do it. So the 10 rands becomes the cause. If something is causeless, then you do it. But you can't say, well, he's doing it for this reason or that, but he's just apparently just doing it. Now, the idea here is that bhakti is not caused by anything material. But it's not done, it's not causeless in the sense that there's absolutely no cause, and you're just simply doing it like a robot, for literally no reason, and you know, it's just like a complete mystery why you're doing it. There is a cause. There's certainly a cause, but it is not at all material, because the activity is completely spiritual. So the cause cannot be material. So then he goes into a discussion of what does this mean, causeless, materially causeless, but somehow something happens, which is the cause. Your devotional service starts to happen. So what is that thing which is considered causeless materially, but is actually a cause? And the fact that it's a cause is manifest in the fact that you're doing devotional service. So he considers a number of possibilities. And I hope you all got this. You all got this?
We'll wipe it off. It'll probably take 5 minutes. Because this duster is so hopeless.
So he considers certain things which may be causes. We could consider these. Are they causes or not? So let's see. Where does he begin? He begins about halfway down the page. Some people take the word, in this case the word is Yadricha. He's quoted another verse. As you can see it there, Mad Bhaktim Chad Cha Yadrichaya Yadrichaya Yaivo Pachita. And there are other verses where a person's getting devotional service is described by the Sanskrit word Yadricha, which directly means good fortune. Good fortune or somehow or other, like that. Someone gets devotional service. So now, just after that, he says, some people take the word to mean good fortune, meaning material fortune, material luck. Some people, in other words, generated by karma, like, so you get devotional service, that's very good. Like you get some money, that's very good. How did you get that money? Because previously you did something good. So that's karma. Now you get the money. So now you have bhakti. So some people may think, well, just like I did something good, I helped some suffering person, so now later on I got some money. That's the karma. So maybe I did something good in the past like that, and now I've got bhakti. Now I've got devotional service, which is giving me access to the Supreme Lord, which otherwise I couldn't have. So that's very fortunate. So what is the cause? Well, maybe it's because I helped some suffering person. Fed the hungry people, clothed the unclothed, housed the unhoused, or whatever. Something like that. Or, alternatively, let's see. Let's go down to the bottom of the same paragraph. The same paragraph. You might consider this good fortune to be not due to pious activity. In other words, it's simply fortune, luck. You were just walking along the street and suddenly, bang, it was right there. So there was no cause, it was simply luck as such. So you might think, number two, it could just be luck. In other words, material good fortune, but without any karma behind it. Truly causeless. And then, the next paragraph, you might also suggest that it might just be Krishna's mercy. Krishna just decided he liked you. Out of all the 300,000 people in Phoenix, he just chose you to give bhakti to, because Krishna somehow just decided he was going to. And then a little, like a variation on it, you might take it to be Krishna's, he says, unqualified mercy. Now basically the same idea. Mercy, unqualified mercy. Anyway, he's making a little distinction there. Then, let's see. Right down in the bottom paragraph, at the beginning of the bottom paragraph, you might consider it to be devotee's mercy. So here we have Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is suggesting five possible alternatives. So let us, they're all here on the pages. So let us just consider them. Now, who feels that there's something wrong with the idea that you might get the transcendental process of bhakti in your hands through having performed some material good activity? Who objects to that idea? You object. Why?
So the definition you've given us, that bhakti has no material cause, and it cannot actually...
Okay. That's the idea. Many people think, even many devotees think, have thought or think, that you can get devotional service through material piety. But actually it's not the case. Because, and this is going to be discussed in the next chapter, which we will also discuss today, he talks about the development of devotional service in terms of the growing of a creeper. And a creeper grows from a seed. So, if you perform some activity, that becomes the seed of the reaction. Right? You do good to someone, that becomes the seed for your getting in the future some beneficial thing through karma. So now, if bhakti is completely transcendental, then the seed for it, or the cause, has to also be transcendental. Just as if you have an apple seed and you plant it in the ground, you will get an apple tree. You will not get an orange tree. Because the seed does not contain whatever it takes to get an orange tree, because of its nature. So material good activity, if we look at it as being the seed for something which we will then gain as the result in the future, material pious activity doesn't include anything spiritual. So that thing which grows from the seed can't be spiritual. It can only be of the nature of the seed. You get the idea? Fairly simple idea. So actually the seed of bhakti has to be spiritual. That thing which causes it, from which bhakti is generated and becomes manifest, that now you have faith, now you're associating with devotees, now you have a taste for Krishna. The seed from which all that is coming has to be spiritual. It can't be just a matter of material karma, and it can't just be good luck. Because good luck means, in fact he says here, about halfway down, if one considers this good fortune is not due to pious activities, but just luck, in other words, then it becomes indescribable, it becomes intangible, it becomes meaningless. You can't, it's like nothing, actually. Phantasmagoria. So then, spiritual. Now, how about Krishna? Krishna is spiritual. So what about Krishna being the cause? How about that? Now, does anyone object to that idea? Any of the Ratajis? You're all sitting there, being very studious. Do any of you object? Do any of you think that a person might not get bhakti by Krishna's mercy? Be it just Krishna's mercy or even his unqualified mercy. What do you think? Or do any of you think anything about it? Pro or con? Do any of you think that, yes, it may be true? Ah, very interesting. you think that. Now, what about you men? Do you also agree? They are saying, it seems there's a consensus to some extent, that a person may get bhakti by Krishna's mercy. Oh, no, no.
Krishna is not partial.
Ah, that's an interesting idea. Well, yes. And in fact...
So if they say that by Krishna's mercy, then how is it that we could argue, how is it that some people get bhakti and some don't?
Very good.
I reject that argument.
Oh, thank you. So all you other ladies, I hate to say it, but you all flop. You're all very master ladies. Just learn the lesson and you'll make up for it. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Sama Aham. Sama means same. Sarvabhuteshu. Samoham Sarvabhuteshu. I am the same to all living entities. Na me dveshosti. I don't hate anyone. Na priyaha. And no one is dear to me. This is talking about just your average person in the material world. I mean, why would he? Why would he be favorable or unfavorable? He's not. He's not. He just sees that you get your karma. If you do good karma, you get it. If you do bad karma, you get it. And he's not thinking, oh, I like this one, so I'm giving them something good, and I don't like this one, so I'll give them something bad. He just sees that you get what you deserve as super soul. So, Krishna is not going to just choose that here is Danny. Because it's Danny, incidentally. That here is Danny, and I like his blue t-shirt. No one else, well, not many others have blue t-shirts. So. I think that today I will give Danny bhakti. Assuming he didn't have it. Of course, he has a lot of bhakti already. Anyway, just people are walking in the street. And Krishna, it is not that Krishna says, you, I'm going to give you bhakti. And all the others, who may be no better than you by material standards, they're just ordinary people, like everyone else. But Krishna just decides, well, I'm not going to bother with you, so you all, you can just, whatever, take your karma and too bad. But you, this particular one, who's just another ordinary person, but you, I'm going to give you bhakti, and in this way you can go back to Godhead and perfect your life. No. Krishna's not like that. Krishna's not like that. Although it is a fact, and the point is made, I think, here. In the second to last paragraph. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's page 2, second to last paragraph. He makes the point that we see that Krishna is partial to his devotees. He favors his devotees. Like, do you know the pastime of Mohini, the lotus Mohini, female form? So the Lord came and cheated the demons to benefit the devotees or the demigods. It was outright cheating. It was. So there, he's not being fair. He's being very unfair. So it is a fact that when you are a devotee already, once you have become a devotee, then Krishna will be partial to you. And in fact, in that same verse that I referred to, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Na me dveshosti na priyaha. But then he says, Ye vajanti tamam bhaktya. But those who worship me in devotion, how's it going? Yeva janik tamam bhaktya. Mai te teshu chapyaham. They are friends to me, they are in me, and I am a friend to them. So Krishna is partial to his devotees once they are devotees, once a person is a devotee. But when they're not, meaning they're the type of person we're talking about, they haven't come to bhakti yet, then it is not a fact that Krishna singles people out from the crowd and just gives them bhakti for no good reason, and the others who are just as qualified or unqualified. They're no better or worse, but they don't get bhakti. Not like that. So in this way, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he refutes these ideas, these first four ideas, and then comes to the fifth idea. What about the devotees? Because the devotees, they give Krishna consciousness sometimes.
So now we have to consider that there are three levels of devotees. I think you already know, don't you? Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttama. So you can't just say the devotees as if they're one group, because they're these three subdivisions and they're actually quite different from each other. So what about a Kanishta? It means the lowest grade of devotee, very, very neophyte. Is it possible or likely, how likely is it that a Kanishta might give someone bhakti? Well, it's not very likely.
Actually, it's not impossible. Anyway, if a person is truly Kanishta, it's not really possible, actually. If they're truly Kanishta. Because Kanishta means that Krishna consciousness to them means me and Krishna. Thus, that's it. There's me and Krishna. And the other devotees, they're not in the picture. They don't count. And those who are not devotees, they also don't count. It's just me and Krishna. So this is Kanishta. So now such a person is not likely, if someone is not a devotee, such a person is not very likely to go up to them and say, hey, come on, become a devotee. And explain it and go through whatever it takes to get the person to take an interest. Because they don't care. All they care about is me and Krishna. And everyone else doesn't matter. They can do what they like. So now what about an Uttama? Top class devotee. Well, I don't know how familiar you are with the characteristics of these different levels of devotees, but one characteristic of the Uttama, Jiva Goswami explains it in very interesting terms in Bhakti Sandhya, which we referred to briefly this morning. So he says that an Uttama is thinking that Krishna is so nice. Krishna is so nice that everyone must like him. And he's so absorbed in that. You can just try to picture a little bit. He's so absorbed in that that he cannot imagine that any person does not like Krishna. He cannot imagine. How is it possible that a person could do anything other than love Krishna? It's impossible. So therefore he thinks there's no need to preach to anyone because they all like Krishna. They're already devotees. Because how could they be anything else? Because Krishna is just so nice. Can you imagine such a consciousness? Not very clearly, because we're not very close to that level. But I think you can get a little idea. So he thinks, there's no need to preach. Because everyone's a pure devotee. They must be. How could they be anything else? It's not possible. He actually cannot see that the possibility of someone not appreciating Krishna exists. Because he's so absolutely absorbed in love of Krishna. This is very amazing consciousness. Then, so that's regarding everyone else. And what about himself? How does he see himself? He sees himself, or herself, as being the most wretched and unqualified and hopeless and useless and even dangerous soul in existence. So Krishna Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that, what is it? Anyone who hears my name, he says, I'm lower than the worm in store. Anyone who hears my name becomes simple. So he's actually thinking like that. It's not just a sentimental expression, but he's actually feeling that I am actually so loved. Now, we are not capable of thinking like that because we are still contaminated. And part of the contamination means we still have some pride. So we may sometimes think, oh yes, I'm not very advanced, so I should try harder. And if something very bad happens, we may think, oh gosh, I really made a mess of that, and actually I'm really quite unqualified. So sometimes we may think like that, but to feel that I am the lowest, actually, and if people associate with me, it'll be bad for them. This is not possible for us. But someone like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who's Uttam Adhikari, he's fixed in that concept of himself. So he feels everyone else is a devotee. How could they be anything else? But me, I'm the worst. So what can I say? What can I tell anyone? How can I help anyone? So therefore, generally, he doesn't preach. Generally, he won't preach. The Kanishtha basically won't preach because he can't, he has no inclination. And the Uttama, when he's acting as Uttama, then he generally won't. Because he feels, first of all, there's no need because they're all pure devotees. And even if there was a need, I couldn't do it because I'm totally unqualified. So there's no, either way, there's no real question. But then what about the Madhyam? Here, let's see. In the last paragraph, he says, considering the case of the Madhyam devotee, the middle class devotee, he says that the Madhyam does exhibit partiality. And where does he get that idea from? From Srimad Bhagavatam. 11.2, what is it? Actually, it's 11.2. It's not 11.3. It's 11.2, 46. There are a few errors. We'll try and bring them to your attention as we go. But it's 11.2.46. In 11.2.46, one great devotee explains what are the four characteristics of a Madhyam, middle-class devotee. So they're here. Love for the Lord, attached to the Lord, friendly to the devotees, merciful to the innocent, and disregards the envious. No interest. Doesn't want to know about them. Keeps away from them. So this is the Shastric definition, which is explaining the natural characteristics of a middle-class devotee. So one of them is the key. That is the third. Merciful to the innocent. So the middle-class devotee, by nature, will be inclined to help people who are not devotees become devotees. But he's selective. If there's someone who's not a devotee, but that person is envious, then he won't deal with them. But if someone is not a devotee, but they're innocent,